Welcome back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula. Bill Russell and I are with Ha Jin, who came to the United States in 1985 expecting to go back after you had your education. This, the tension that Bill referred to early on between the ancient and the modern, I would think that some of those tensions for you and in your stories, in being now a Chinese-American, being both Chinese and American, thinking both in Chinese and in English, I would think I would think there would be great tension between these.
Sure, yes, yes.
What is the inside of that?
I think at the beginning it was quite painful, honestly. You know, there is kind of a transition, you know, change. I could feel I was changing myself in order to be able to think in English and to express myself in English. And I think there was also a kind of a confusion. Mentally, I was not ready to immigrate because originally I had planned to return to China. So I didn't know what to do with my life and how to. In the States, it was clear to me, as long as you are in good health and you work, you won't starve. That's the beauty of American life. That's very
obvious. As
long as you're in good health, as long as you work, that's fine. But the thing, the problem is how to exist, to live your life meaningfully.
What drew you here in the first place? You could have built quite a good life in China.
Yeah, that's true. I had a very good job in China, a very, very good job. I was a translator and a researcher in American literature. It's really a very privileged job. That's why I planned to return to China. Even my dissertation was written with an eye for the mainland Chinese market. But that's why I couldn't find a job here. So everything was off kilter, I would say, and I didn't know what to do. It took me a while to figure out maybe I should write in English.
That must have been a great leap all by itself.
No, it took a year for me to decide just write in English.
Can you point to the critical, it may just be accumulation, it could be a single event. What was it that made you decide not to go back?
A Tiananmen massacre.
Was that?
That's really. I couldn't expect. I didn't expect that it would happen. I thought the army is around the city, and I had served in the army, and the first principle of the army was to protect and serve the people. Now the whole thing was reversed, and it was beyond me, and I couldn't accept it, and I couldn't serve a government like that.
I wondered as I thought about you and Tiananmen and the massacre there, I wondered what the sub-level in your thinking must have been in terms of having lived with the results, at least, of the Cultural Revolution. I've always wondered, at the time Tiananmen happened, what the similarities and differences were as the army kind of went nuts, as looked to me, during the Cultural Revolution, and then that you get this next wave of violence against the people. Is there continuity between those in your thinking?
Yeah, maybe on the surface both are a kind of mass movement, and but the demands are different. And also the Cultural Revolution, in that movement, most people were used by the leaders in order to get rid of other leaders. But the student movement in 89, I think, is kind of different. They are very peaceful. They were not violent at all. They didn't demand too much. And
it's almost as if they reversed roles.
Yes, yes. And then even in the Cultural Revolution, the government didn't use the field armies to that way. You use tanks to crush civilians. It didn't make sense at all. And so it's very different, very different. And also, I think there is a clear sense of that a bunch of old guards who want to hold on to power. That's very clear. The old in order to keep their power, they kill the young, they sacrifice the young. Whereas in the Cultural Revolution, you don't have that dimension at all. Everybody was very actively participated because they believe in the revolution, or some of them became victims of the revolution. There is a sense of purpose, collective purpose, that is well sponsored by the government as well. But in 89, the whole very obvious, it's power struggle.
Can you see a way out? I mean, it seems, and you know, the old guard will die, but there's continuity of leadership in some ways behind that. Is it? Do you see any way that the Communist Party can adapt itself to accept the kinds of things that those students wanted in 89?
There may be possibilities. I do believe things may change, but very slowly. And of course, the old generation, they will die, and but the successors very often are picked by them, handpicked.
Well, but the environment has changed. I mean, you started out talking about context, and the context in China is a different context now.
Maybe in economy, but political, I'm not sure. Political context may be still similar. If artistically the same, you know, and very difficult to have a honest book published, and they don't arrest authors now, but they arrest editors instead.
So the effect is the same.
Yes, but it's worse.
Actually, that's more efficient.
Yes, because editors, they don't have a voice. And that's crazy. Yeah. They don't have a voice, and the outside won't pay attention to them. So in a more subtle way.
Again, looking back at 4,000 or 5,000 or 6,000 or 7,000 or 8,000 years of Chinese history, which always amazes me, I think it was Jared Diamond who was pointing out, as we think about how humans have moved around the planet and the effect of large migrations of people and adaptations to local places, I think it was he who pointed out how important it was that very early the Chinese centralized, that its vastness and the centralized notion of power over great stretches of land and people. I wonder, you as an artist, do you have a sense of where your place is in that large centralized experience? And of course, it's almost as if you are giving us a window into that as you stand outside also looking in.
It's hard because China is a vast country. There are so many tribes, minority groups, and so many languages, dialects. I can't position myself in that context. Besides, I'm writing English. That already a force that alienate myself from the Chinese. And that has
Do you really feel that?
Yes. In the beginning, I didn't expect. I expect that, but I didn't feel it. But as I continue to write, I can feel it. So that's another very important force. So in that sense, I really can't be that ambitious. I can, you know, what I should do is focus on the story, really make a good piece of work, let the work, the story and the poem speak for themselves.
So you're looking for the human experience.
Yeah, that's the only thing, the individuals, more private, more particular experience.
As you live in America, can you see similarities, and you've lived here a long time now, can you see similarities in those very human experiences across those cultures? Because in your stories, the difference between the Chinese who go to America and come back and the Americans who come to China, they're vastly different people in many ways.
Sure,
yes. Can you also see the similarities as you're looking for that human experience in your storytelling?
Yes. And the desire to love somebody, to be loved, and the traumatic experience, emotional experience in relationships, and that's very similar. In fact, I receive letters from some readers, even female readers, women readers, and some of them said they lived a life like Lincoln's. I was surprised. I thought only men would, you know, have that kind of emotional retardation.
Retardation, isn't that well put? Is there a similar word in Chinese?
Yeah. When I first heard about your work, my first thought, of course, was of Joseph Conrad.
Of course.
Because he also was someone whose native language was radically different, not quite as different as Chinese, but became a luminous writer in English, as you have. I would think that in some ways there is an advantage by being an outsider. In some ways you have an objective perspective, linguistically even. I mean, that you're able to see things about the world that we in this language cannot see, and that once you make that transition, that you would have access to things that those of us who speak only English or Western languages don't have. But I also think it would be just a tremendously difficult challenge.
I'm going to give you a chance to think about that, because that will take you more time than we have in this segment.
Okay.
Please let's come back together when Hajin, our guest, is with us, and we return with the Paula Gordon Show. Please stay tuned.